everybody, it's Tyler Mon. Before we get to this week's episode, a breaking news note and a programming note. Since we recorded this, after we recorded and before the show was posted, Jose Reyes was suspended through the end of May by Major League Baseball today. So there's some Jose Reyes conversation in here in which we talk about what at the time was an impending suspension, a looming suspension that was to be announced today. That has since been announced. You can go read about that online, obviously, but you'll get our opinions on the matter in the show today. We just didn't have the final details. Secondly, show might sound a little bit different today. We had a bit of a microphone snafu thanks to the good folks at Skype. So if my audio sounds strange, don't worry. It's a one-week thing, and you'll get through it, I promise. So with that, on to episode number 74 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. Hope you enjoy. Exciting pitching matchup on the horizon at Coors Field tonight. When was the last time anybody ever said that?
It's been a while, actually.
Man, I'm really excited for this Rockies matchup with another starter.
But I am, though.
I know, so am I. I'm excited.
Except they're playing at home, so maybe it won't go that well.
Yeah, probably not. Hey, welcome in. It's the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. A podcast to talk about Colorado Rockies baseball for some reason. I'm Tyler Mon.
I'm Anthony Masterson, and good morning to you.
Good morning. Yeah, we're recording this on Friday morning.
I'm 30.
Yeah, happy birthday. How's it feel?
I feel like
30 feels.
I've just got one foot in the grave.
Oh, I felt like that since I was 19.
Oh,
that's when I was 19 one comforting. Time, I was at my best friend's younger sister's birthday party, and I was 19, and one of my best friend's sister's friends said to my best friend, quote, "Who's that 35-year-old man hitting on Larissa?" And I was 19, and I'd also known that child for 5 years, so there was no hitting on going on. It was just like a, hey, happy birthday, and I looked like I was 35 at 19. So that's how I felt. That's how I felt.
Wow. At least tell your therapist.
A lot of stuff going on there. Yeah. A lot of stuff going on there. So, hey, episode number 74. We have somebody for this, right?
We do. Number 74, Edwar Cabrera, changeup specialist.
Yeah, that worked out well.
Yeah, he was had some good years in the minor leagues with the Rockies, but came up, made two starts in 2012, gave up 7 earned runs on 3 homers in 5 2/3 innings, good for a 11.12 earned run average.
Woo!
Yeah,
most recently
it was a lot of fun.
Is Edwar Cabrera. He's still only 28.
God, that's amazing.
I'm pretty sure that he was a ranked prospect at one time. Yeah,
he was a Casper
18.
Ghost.
He was the number 18 prospect in the system heading into 2012, according to Baseball America. Yeah, he was a ghost.
And in 2012, with Asheville Modesto, he put 11-5 in 21 starts, a 3.05 earned run average, struck out 121 batters in 129 2/3. Yeah.
His minor league numbers are fantastic.
Pretty good.
Yeah. His minor league numbers are great.
You really think, hey, this kid could have really helped out the Rockies at some point.
They gave him 2 starts and were like, get the hell out of here, kid.
Seriously, though, because I remember when he did make his debut, I was like, oh, you know, he got hit around, but whatever, you know, give him a couple chances. Like, he had really good minor league numbers, and then they just never saw him
what
again.
What happened there? Did he have TJ? Because he missed all 2013.
He must have.
Yeah. Huh. Well, that's interesting.
Edwar Cabrera, he's been dead for 10 years.
His numbers are very, very good. But
still in Fresno. Yeah. Numbers in Fresno aren't very good this year.
Huh. How weird.
Good for Edwar Cabrera, though.
Yeah. Cabrera still was out all of 2013 with a shoulder injury. So that's what happened there. Then he was claimed off waivers by the Rangers, went to Frisco and Round Rock in 2014, last year in Frisco and Round Rock as well, this year in Fresno. Pitched actually last winter in the Dominican Winter League for the Toros del Este in La Romana. That means the Bulls of the East. And that's Christian Adames' team. He's always tweeting pictures and stuff from them. But was good. Was good with the Toros, but he's not in the big leagues yet. But anyway, there's a long and lengthy breakdown on Edwar Cabrera, in case you were wondering what happened to him.
Yeah. We're sorry.
And yeah, and with that, episode number 74 is underway. Tonight at Coors Field, 1
John Gray goes against
Jan Gray.
Matt Harvey. This should be interesting. Two things. Jonathan Charles Gray, so far in his Rockies career this season, has looked pretty damn good on the road. Overall numbers, an 0-1 record, a 5.40 ERA in four games started. But did you guys watch his last two times on the road? Because they were sexy.
Yeah, in those times, he only gave up two earned runs on five hits in 13 innings of work. He struck out 16 batters in those 13 innings, only walked three, did not allow a home run, did not throw even more than 89 pitches in any of those starts either.
And both of those runs came in the first inning of that first start against San Diego. So
yes,
over 12 innings, he was shutout ball.
Yeah, but pretty much everybody was, you know, have a shutout streak going on the road, that 6-4 road trip that seems like so long ago. But yes, John Gray, if he has figured it out, that's good, because this is his one, his final white whale to take over in his career so far, in his short career. It is pitching well at Coors Field. The career splits for John Gray are still very, very wonky. In his career at home, in seven starts, he has a 9.20 earned run average. In six starts on the road, he has a 2.18 career earned run average. That's a seven-run difference in home and road.
Yeah, and when you look at all of his peripherals, John Gray is going to be legit. Everything's going to regress. I mean, eventually, his BABIP, I think, now is down to like 353 or something like that. Yeah. So things are starting to come around for him.
So it's still the higher echelon of where it's supposed to be.
Yeah, definitely. You're still, you definitely want to see the types of steps forward at home that you're seeing on the road from him. They're not going to be, you know, necessarily the same types of steps, or at least to the extent that they are. But I think there are unbelievably encouraging signs there from John Gray. The thing that I really like about it is, Eddie Butler's kind of following suit too. And we'll talk about this. So here's what we got coming up on the show today. We're going to talk, we'll hear from one Ben Paulson. Ben Paulson's coming up on the show a little bit later on today. Very handsome, got lost in his eyes for, well, the interview is about 10 minutes. And for the rest of the day, I couldn't stop thinking about his eyes. And so we'll hear from Ben Paulson a little bit later on. It's actually a really interesting conversation.
You're so weird. You're weird.
I can admit when a man is handsome, Anthony. Nothing wrong with that.
The Todd appreciates hot regardless of gender.
Yeah, totally. But it's an interesting conversation because we talked a little bit about, what it's like playing with Nolan and Trevor Story on the left side of the infield, what it's like, what college baseball is like in the South, because obviously Ben Paulson is a Clemson product and people out here don't really get how huge that is. So there's some interesting talk about that. There's also some really interesting talk about the way that the Rockies practice shifting, which I thought was really cool to hear. So that's in there, kind of more of a discussion of what it takes to be a versatile guy who can play both the outfield and play at first base and hold down a spot in the lineup and what he's learning from Mark Reynolds and all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot in there with Ben Paulson.
Did you talk about his old mustache?
I did talk about his mustache. I did, indeed. That is in there as well. And the answer may surprise you. Ben Paulson grows his mustache by trying this one weird trick. So we'll hear from Ben Paulson here in a little bit. And we are also going to talk about the struggles of the Colorado Rockies at home, because those have not been fun. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. We'll talk about a couple of Rockies' former top prospects who are back in action, who we're really pulling for. Tonight. I mean, this is the first topic of conversation is this John Gray-Matt Harvey matchup. Just real quick, Matt Harvey against the Rockies in his career. Three games started, one complete game shutout, 2-0 record, a 0.39 ERA, 19 strikeouts against two walks in 23 innings, and opponents are reaching at a whip rate of 0.565.
Is that good?
This should go really well.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know. Yeah. Yeah, the Mets have really, they've really struggled at Coors Field recently,
The good news is I don't think that the seven-line army is going to be here. I'm pretty sure that the trip to San Diego was their invasion trip this year. So, I mean, there will still be 50% Mets fans, but it won't be all concentrated in one second like it's a goddamn European soccer match.
Yeah, you have to hope, though, that since Harvey's been kind of struggling as of late, his last start notwithstanding in San Diego, struck out 10 batters in six innings. But for the most part, he has not been the Matt Harvey that we've been accustomed to seeing this year. So But regardless, considering the talent that these two guys have at the mound today, it's one of those matchups where you don't get to see that often at Coors Field. You get to see the other guy. This time the Rockies have a guy who can go toe for toe if they really wanted to. So
in theory.
Yeah, of course, in theory. That's always the thing. I don't know. This is something rare that we're not used to seeing.
Tomorrow was going to be a good one, too. Sunday's a good one. Tyler Chatwood against Jacob deGrom and his hair. Tomorrow was supposed to be Eddie Butler against Steven Matz, which was kind of the Rockies' forgotten young prospect against the Mets' up-and-coming, but still more underrated.
But still kind of forgotten.
Than everybody else's young prospect. I was looking at, I forget the Mets have Rafael Montero, too.
Who's
a stud prospect also, and Montero nobody remembers anymore. And he's still down in Triple A right
now. He might as well
now.
Be dead.
But yeah, exactly. He basically, at this point, he's 25 and, you know, throws 1,000 miles an hour and was a top 100 prospect a couple of years ago, and, like, nobody remembers Rafael Montero. but yeah, tomorrow would have been that, but they're skipping Steven Matz on this turn through. Here's the interesting thing about the Mets. Steven Matz, some elbow tenderness, he's going to be skipped. The Mets also just very kind of underhandedly noted the other day after Noah Syndergaard's brilliant performance, including two home runs against the Dodgers, that he was sent for an MRI on his elbow last week.
Yeah,
and then
right.
They were, like, very tight-lipped about it. Like, he wouldn't really discuss why. He said he wasn't having any pain or any discomfort. But it was just like, oh, yeah, we had his elbow looked at. And he was like, no, it was a precautionary thing. It's fine. You don't just go get an elbow looked at.
Noah, that's not how that works, man.
My car is running great. Can you guys just take a look at this? Make sure that it's good? Like, it's running really well, and it is making me worried.
But can I just, like, get a new engine?
Right, exactly. That's not how it works. But it kind of brings us into a conversation that obviously is going on around the world of baseball everywhere these days. I'm reading The Arm currently.
Ooh, okay.
Which is really, really fascinating. But one of the things that I was reading in addition to that was a discussion somewhere online about the teams that really seem to struggle the most with Tommy John. And, of course, the Braves are in there. But the Mets also, Syndergaard's the only guy in that rotation who hasn't had to deal with that. And
he just went to go have his elbow checked.
Yeah, and he throws 1,000 miles an hour.
I mean, he came out, he clearly was not hampered in any way against the Dodgers.
It looks great.
He was pumping 101, like, consistently in the eighth inning. It's
but
like, okay, well, I
so
guess
crazy.
He's fine.
Is that you don't really know when it's going to pop up. And, you know, if I'm a Mets fan, well, if I'm a Mets fan, God forbid I was ever a New York sports fan. Because, which, my mom's from New York, as everybody heard last week. So for the first, like, 8 years of my life before we got the Rockies, I was kind of a Yankees fan in the rare stages that we would actually get, you know, Yankees games on TV here. That's what we would watch at home. But, because those are the most neurotic people on the planet, and I'm already the most negative neurotic sports fan on the planet, so God forbid I was actually one of those people. Because if I was a Mets fan, I would just sit in my house with, like, padding on the walls, waiting to bash my head into them when all of these elbows exploded simultaneously. But that, like, they just tossed that in there. Like, oh, and no, Syndergaard also.
Oh, yeah, by the way.
Like, what?
Oh, boy.
So anyway, that could be something to keep an eye on. But John Gray against Matt Harvey tonight could be a lot of fun. John Gray, I'm really excited to see. That road trip came at the perfect time. To go through San Diego and San Francisco and get John Gray and Eddie Butler a chance to put two really, really damn good starts under their belts, I like that a lot.
Yeah. Butler, he is start in San Diego didn't end the way he wanted it to. The overall line doesn't look great, but you saw the signs that were coming up for Eddie that day, and then he just picked it up in that start against San Francisco, one of that shutout start that he had. I mean, this is it. It's now you got to prove that you can do it at Coors Field too. And that's the big bugaboo for all these Rockies prospects. Whenever they come up, they have to figure out how to pitch at Coors Field. And especially with Gray, because his splits are so squiffy. But Eddie Butler, the same. He hasn't had many great performances at Coors Field in his career. So it's time for these guys to realize that they can do this. They have the stuff. They don't have to change their approach, change the way they pitch. Just do what you did in those two starts in San Diego and in San Francisco and apply it to Coors Field.
I'm excited for this game.
Me too.
I'm going to go down and try to stake out a spot in the press box early because I'm sure there are 1,000 beat reporters coming with the Mets, but should be a lot of fun to watch those two. And if it's not, then at least I can just stew in silent rage in the press box. Because that's the nice thing about the press box is you just have to swallow all of your anger. Because you can't cheer. You can't, like, there's no outburst. There's no emotion in the press box. You just have to and build a tumor.
I'm surprised that there wouldn't be booing coming from most of the Denver media in the press box.
Yeah, true. just laughter, just stifled, not even stifled laughter, just boisterous laughter. Look at these losers cheering on their baseball team. How pathetic.
I don't know. I could
see
them cheer on
a sixth rounder.
Yeah. I could see them, you know, cheering on something bad happening to the Rockies, because that's usually what they do anyway.
I could.
So,
So anyway, that's coming up tonight. Very exciting. By the time you listen to this, it's probably already started. Elsewhere, where do we want to go next? The Colorado Rockies have not been good at home.
No.
What? What is happening there? I talked to a member of the Rockies front office the other day. Let's call him Beth Dreidich. And we were discussing just how good the Rockies looked on the road.
Okay.
And I said, it's been a little different here. And he said, yeah, we got to figure out what the hell's going on here. which I love. But it's so weird. Like, you're the soothsayer. You're the Nate Silver of this podcast. What's going on?
Yeah, I'm the Nate Silver. Yeah, I don't do predictions. I just look at the data.
You're the data guy.
I just look at data.
I just run the
So far, the Rockies this season, 11-8 on the road. 3.38 earned run average. That's in the top five of the National League. That's in the top 10 in all of Major League Baseball in road ERA. It would be a full half run better than in any other season they'd put together in ERA on the road. Nearly a half run. 3.71 in 1995 was the previous best road ERA for a full season of Colorado Rockies baseball. Now, at home, the team is 5-10 this year with an ERA hovering above 7, a 7.24 to be exact, worst in all of Major League Baseball. And, you know, you wonder, because 15, and basically it's just been the home run balls would kill them. 15 games at home, they've allowed 25 home runs. In 19 road games, they have allowed 14 home runs. And that's what we've been talking about with the new era of Jeff Breidich and bringing in pitchers who pitch a certain way, is that you don't want these guys to beat themselves. They don't walk a lot of guys, or at least on the road, they haven't walked a lot of guys. They haven't given up the home run ball for the most part, and that is what you want to do. Especially at Coors Field, you cannot afford to beat yourself. Walking a bunch of guys, you're not going to win games that way. We saw in that Diamondback series, besides the third game, which they blew a 6-run lead, eventually came back to win, they weren't really even in any of those games, like after the sixth inning. And it was just kind of like, okay, well, this is how it normally works. We're used to seeing these games at Coors Field.
Yeah.
But right now, the walks per nine at home for the starters at Coors Field is 3.9, which is, you know, better, I guess, but you're still giving too many guys on base, and John Gray's had his, you know, BABIP gods starts at Coors Field.
They've started relent. Well, not at Coors
Field,
but they've started to relent on the road. I guess when you're striking everybody out, it doesn't, you know.
It helps.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily hurt your BABIP.
No, but the home run ball has obviously been the killer. I mean, 11 more home runs in four fewer games at home. I mean, yeah, obviously Coors Field's gonna allow a lot more home runs. That's going to happen. We get it. But not to that extent. I mean, those are just you not making your pitches at a certain point.
Yep. I mean, that's really, I think, a lot of what it comes down to. I was asked this question on Altitude 950 with Nate Krugman and Tom Nalen this week about why it is that these guys seem, you know, Tyler Chatwood being the perfect example. Tyler Chatwood's overall numbers on the road, 4-0, 0.33 ERA. At home, 0-3, 7.88. He's given up 14 earned runs and 5 homers in 16 innings at home. But what he's also done is he's walked 6 guys and only struck out 9 at home, nice, in 16 innings. On the road, he struck out 21 and walked 5 in 27 and 2/3. And so what I said to those guys is, it's not just that he's being beaten in more circumstances. I mean, opponents are batting 348 against him at home. But he's also giving away bases. He's giving away base runners. And you get burned so much more intensely when you do that at Coors Field than when you do it on the road. If you're walking 5 guys and striking out 21, if you have that ratio, that over 4-1 ratio at home, you're going to be pretty successful. But when you're walking 6 as opposed to 9 strikeouts at home, yeah, you're going to find yourself in a lot more difficult situations. So I think that contributes to it in part as well.
Just call Coors Field the Icarus line, you know, because we're flying too close to the sun. We're a little bit higher. Too close to the sun. Yes, exactly. Oh, my God. They think we'd be the Colorado Fighting Icaruses.
I'd be down with that. There'd be some sweet logo potential in there.
But yeah, in his last start, Tyler Chatwood at home against the Diamondbacks, 6 innings, 6 runs on 7 hits, walked 3, struck out 3, and that's not what we were accustomed to seeing. His inning scoreless streak on the road is still, I think, at 24 and a third innings, which is the second longest road streak by a starter in history, so in franchise history. So it's just not the guy that we saw, and it's not like he wasn't playing good teams. He had faced the Diamondbacks already twice this season in his last previous appearance against the Diamondbacks, threw 6 1/3 shutout innings, and his first start gave up 2 runs, 1 earned, and 6 1/3 against Diamondbacks. It's not like they're like, oh, well, he hasn't seen this team yet, or he's been playing crappy competition. No, he just hadn't played them at Coors Field. His previous start at Coors Field against the Dodgers only lasted 4 innings, a season low, gave up 3 runs on 6 hits, but threw 95 pitches in 4 innings.
Very strange.
You have to wonder if it's a mindset at this point, like a mindset and a game plan, because when you're going into Coors Field, like, okay, I can't throw certain pitches, or oh man, what if I throw this pitch here? You know, it's got to be just taking the same approach you took on that road trip, taking the exact same game plan, and putting it to use successfully in Colorado. It doesn't seem like it's that hard of a concept to grasp, but when you conceptualize it into reality, clearly there's a disconnect somewhere along the line.
It's very strange. I mean, yeah, it's so much easier said than done, all the things to just, you know, put together a start at Coors Field the same way you would do it on the road, because I think what happens is guys try to do that, and then when they get into a circumstance where all of a sudden, yeah, you issued a walk, and then, you know, a guy went to second on a ball in the dirt or whatever it is, and then there's a little bleeder single that's not a base hit anywhere else, and that gets a run home, and then all of a sudden you just want to punch yourself in the face. Like, that's kind of what it feels like happens when starts begin to spiral away from guys. But at the same time, you can't give into that. I think that's what the Rockies have really tried to preach is, yeah, but you still have to stick to throwing strikes, working around the zone. All of the things that make you successful in San Diego and San Francisco can make you successful in Colorado. It's not like you have to come here and you have to learn how to throw a Dice K gyro ball. Like, it's...
Gyro ball, please.
It's still in the gyro.
Ooh, I would eat a gyro ball.
Oh, I would too. That sounds delicious.
Sounds great.
Oh my god. But it's just, you know, like, you have to be able to stick to those things, and so often I think that is not the case. But yeah, I got no idea what's going on with this team at home. No idea. You never think to yourself, like, man, I wish I could just go on the road again.
Yeah, right. this Rockies weirdest, team, like, most God, can we please just go on the road some more?
When are they going to have another road trip? Sick of seeing this team struggle at home. But it is very strange, and it feels like such a slap in the face when it's like, that's always a comfort blanket. You know, like, well, at least they're getting home. They'll get healthy at home soon.
Also, we really shouldn't
hope
that.
Everybody else does.
Yeah, the next road trip is the 9-gamer coming up starting Tuesday at St. Louis, at Pittsburgh, and at Boston. That's going to be an absolute nightmare of a road trip.
Yeah, that Pittsburgh series just feels like the Cardinals are really not that great of a team. And the Red Sox, you know, I think they're a good team, but they're not
The Red Sox have scored 11 runs in 4 consecutive games.
Yeah. the Oakland A's are the happiest team in the world to not see the Red Sox anymore. But the that Pirates series feels like the Rockies are just going to get obliterated. You know, they played like garbage against the Pirates here. It's Clint Hurdle. Kutch had 3 homers in that game. It's, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
If they come out of this road trip at 5-4, I think that's best case scenario.
Yeah. I would say so. You know, they've been above 500 on their 2 long road trips already this season. So if you go.
It's really, really. After that road trip, the schedule lessens a little bit. You come home for 3 with the Giants, 4 with the Reds, 3 at San Diego, 3 at LA, and then the makeup with Pittsburgh, and then you play San Diego again before the Yankees come to town. So, I don't know. This is the biggest gauntlet of the Rocky season starts tonight. Cool. 3 against the Mets, then the 9-gamer at St. Louis, at Pittsburgh, at Boston. I think that's honestly probably the worst stretch, or at least toughest stretch, of baseball for the Rockies the entire season starting tonight.
Well, and what we had talked about is, can this team hang around even? Can they hang around the 500 mark?
If you get buried here over the next 2 weeks, I don't know, man.
That's what always happens with the Rockies. There's always those stretches.
Like, if you go 2-10 over the next 12 games,
yeah,
I don't know. That's tough to bounce back from, considering you're right around 500 right now.
Right.
You're currently sitting at 16 and 18, really only a game and a half back of first place. We're not talking about the division really yet, but just for context.
Just to keep it in mind, yeah.
Yeah. Like, nobody else is playing that well in the NL West right
now. There are 2.5 games that separate the leader in the division from last place in the division. 2.5 games. The next smallest margin in any other division in baseball is the American League East, where 7 games separate first place from last place.
The Twins are 14 games back of the White Sox already. The Braves are 12.5 back of the Mets and Nats. The Brewers are 12 back of the Cubs. And here we are, 2 games under 500, 1.5 games out of first place.
Dude, a couple things from looking at the Major League standings that these have brought to mind that I want to discuss. Just real quickly, could you imagine being a Twins or a Braves fan this season? Like, being a Braves fan, at least you can say there's so much on the way. That system is so talent-laden.
The Twins don't have players. Come on,
the
Twins
have. Like, who other than Byron Buxton? Like, a lot of guys are pretty far off, and it's not the depth that you have in the Atlanta system or elsewhere. Like, you've got some guys who, you know, like Tyler Jay is a fun prospect. He'll be good eventually. Max Kepler, I think, is going to be really good. But then it's like, who after that? Like, okay,
you also have guys that are. You also have guys right now that are in your major league team, like Miguel Sano, who is still very, very young and a big building block in your team.
Jose Berrios will be good.
Yeah.
But they just don't. I mean, think the Twins will be fine, but I don't know if. I mean, I don't think that they are going to be as good as the Braves are going to be in 3 years. But just at the same time, like, God, they've lost 7 straight. They're 18-25. They're 8-25. They're 2-15 on the road. The Braves are 2-17 at home.
Yeah.
That's, at home! Like, the Rockies, like, it feels miserable for the Rockies to be 5-10. The Braves are 2-17 at home. What? And one of those wins is over the Cubs.
Yeah.
How? Huh. What?
I mean, but before the Padres took 2-3 from the Cubs in that series with the doubleheader, the Rockies are the only team to beat the Cubs in a series this year.
Yeah, baseball's weird.
So, yeah, baseball is weird. One of my favorite weird baseball stats so far this year, I told you before we started recording, the Rockies this season, in 15 games at Coors Field, have 19 home runs, which is pretty good. The Rockies in 6 games at Chase Field this year in Arizona have 16 home runs. 16 home runs in 6 games at Chase Field. They only have 3 more in 15 games at home this year.
Makes sense. Makes sense.
Let's put that one in your hash pipe.
The good news
is actually don't try to smoke it.
The New York Mets don't have any pitching, so I mean obviously the Rockies will get healthy against Matt Harvey and Jacob DeGrom, man. Let's stay at the major league level real quick, and then we're going to dive into a couple of things at the minor league level. By the way, some news that just came across a bit ago. Miguel Castro is headed to AAA Albuquerque on a rehab assignment. That, according to our good friends over at Rockies Roster on Twitter. So that's really good news. Let's talk about Jose Reyes a little bit. Before we talk about Jose Reyes, one thing that I want to discuss just quickly. Dude, how bad has Tulo been? Tulo has been terrible this season.
He almost could not be worse.
Which, I was told that I'm not allowed to like Gerardo Parra. And then I was subtweeted by @Rockies vs. Connor for something that I didn't even do. So thanks, Connor, jackass. But people who are not allowed to like Troy Tulowitzki, these are his numbers this year. 172 is the batting average. 172 points is the batting average. Batting 172, 34 games into a season. 172, 275, 336. That's the slash line. That adds up to a 611 OPS. In 34 games this season, Tulo has struck out 39 times. Like, people bitch and moan about Trevor Story, and Trevor Story has struck out a lot. He's got 50 strikeouts in 33 games. But Trevor Story is also 23. Troy Tulowitzki has been the preeminent offensive shortstop in baseball for the last decade and just can't get it figured out this year. And I'm not wishing any harm on Tulo. Like, that sucks. But, God, what is going on with that dude? He has not hit over 200 since opening day. He went 1-for-3 on opening day. He touched the 200 mark on April 5th. Since then, he's been a sub-200 hitter. And he's not really showing signs of turning it around. Swing and miss rates are the highest of his career. Yeah. And the thing is, like, obviously, it's the most, of all of our jokes, it's the most facetious joke. So we're not ready to declare that the Rockies won the trade. But is it possible that maybe the Rockies knew that after 30 years old, elite shortstops don't get better? Could that be possible?
You want to know something funny about Rockies and potentially winning the trades? So here is the lowest line drive percentage in all of baseball, of all qualified hitters. Number one, or whatever, Marcus Semien, 10.8% from Oakland. Whose name looks like something funny. Number two, Troy Tulowitzki, 12.9% line drives this year. Obviously a career low, second worst in all of baseball. Number three, lowest line drive percentage in all of baseball, Corey Dickerson, 13.2%. I'm not saying,
that went
I'm just
quickly.
Saying.
Everybody's, no, oh, what are they doing? That went quickly. Well, I mean, I think it's still out there because people hate Jake McGee already. Even though Jake McGee hasn't been terrible. Like, he hasn't been
Of rough starts or rough outings there. But overall, he has been good.
Yeah.
When called upon, he has been good.
Corey Dickerson so far this season, the slash line is not terrible, but it's also not pretty. Well, at least in terms of the OPS, just because of his slugging percentage. But he's batting 182, 250, 475. He does have 8 homers in 30 games, and he's driven in 17. But, it's almost as if the Rockies didn't trade away Babe Ruth, which the reaction to the trade would have made you think was a certainty what happened.
And the other guy that got for him, German Marquez, he has gone to Hartford right now. Mm-hmm. In 6 starts, a 1.03 earned run average.
Best in the East.
He's allowed a 180 batting average against. He's only allowed 2 home runs. He struck out 28 in 35 innings. He's a 3-1 record. And oh yeah, coming off of 8 innings of 1-hit ball against New Hampshire back on the 8th of May. So German Marquez has been...
good trades.
It's almost look like they have made good trades so far. Huh. Who knew? Who knew?
The other guy who was included in the old Troy Tulowitzki deal, before we talk about the big one that we want to talk about, Jeff Hoffman. Now, Jeff Hoffman has been fantastic so far this season. Last time through was really basically his roughest outing, and it was really not that bad of a day at all. He went 5 innings on the road at Salt Lake City back on May 11th. 5 hits, 3 runs, 2 of them earned. He struck out 6, and he walked 3. That matched his season high in walks and was also one shy of matching his season high in earned runs allowed. But Jeff Hoffman's been fantastic. His overall numbers this season, a 2-2 record in 7 starts, 2.16 ERA. But I will quote from our good pal Sam Dykstra at MILB.com. Just keep this in mind and temper yourselves a little bit about Jeff Hoffman at the moment. Quote, by usual standards, Hoffman's first full season in the Rocky system is off to a great start as he's gone at this time, 2-1 with a 1.96 ERA. Go a little deeper and that's when things start to look a little less rosy. Hoffman's put up a fairly average 7.4 strikeouts per 9 over his 6 starts with the Isotopes. Again, this is prior to his last one. And that, combined with a relatively high 1 home run per 9 innings, leads to a rough 4.53 FIP. No other pitcher in the Pacific Coast League has a bigger gulf between his ERA and his FIP than Hoffman's 2.56. A big part of that is Hoffman is fairly contact-reliant as a ground ball pitcher, and if his defense can help keep his batting average on balls in play low, then the ERA should follow. Hoffman's 2.28 BABIP is the second lowest in the PCL, and while his ability to limit extremely hard contact in the early going is laudable, until he starts missing bats at impressive levels, don't get too caught up in thinking he's especially dominant based on ERA alone just yet. So, Jeff Hoffman obviously has been good, and this is not, whoa, Jeff Hoffman sucks, he's the reverse John Gray, where all the numbers look good, but he's really bad. But there's more to the story, obviously, than just the early eye-popping ERA. Still, I think the Rockies have to feel pretty damn good about what they got in return for Troy Tulowitzki at this rate. And that brings us to Jose Reyes.
What a segue. Coming down this morning that Jose Reyes, the suspension could be announced, one, of upwards of 60 games, and two, is that teams are reportedly interested in trading for Jose Reyes. That being reported by Buster Olney, John Heyman, and J.P. Morosi this morning. Which, okay, so where do we even start with this? So, one, We were told, mid-March, that it would be days, not weeks, that the suspension would come down after Reyes was placed on paid leave early in spring training.
And then told again in early April.
It's been literally 2 months since that first declaration of days, not weeks. And then told again in early April it was going to happen once again. And we're sitting here in the middle of May now, and still nothing has come down. And it is a Friday. This is a classic Friday news dump kind of story for MLB. But okay, then that's number one. We'll get back to that. Number two is that teams would be interested in trading for Jose Reyes.
Yeah, who the hell? Who are these teams? By the way, I love the serious shade that Ken Rosenthal throws at readers who don't bother to read his stuff, because there's nothing more annoying on social media than people who come at you for something that they obviously have not taken the time to understand. But Rosenthal tweeted out a link to a story that he put together about the Reyes suspension, and then somebody responded, "Wait, he'd get credit for time served? He's getting paid. That's utter garbage. He beat the piss out of his wife." To which Rosenthal responded, "Read the story. Suspension is," and then in all caps, "unpaid." So it's not as if Jose Reyes has been collecting checks for the last month that he's going to get to bank.
Don't let the Denver Post tell you differently.
Right,
though.
Exactly. So anyway, continue. I just wanted to jump in because I love his shade.
Yeah. So Jose Reyes this year, because the money comes to be a factor, he is owed $22 million this year, $22 million next year, and has a 2018 option that includes a $4 million buyout. So you'd have to imagine any deal the Rockies probably have to pay at least some portion of that salary, but if they could be off the hook with that, oh my God, that'd be the win of the entire season, no matter what would happen the rest of the season on the field. If you can get out from Jose Reyes's contract, one, for the PR purposes, that's a big win for the Rockies, and two, just having that off the books sooner than even the end of 2017, which the whole point, well, the overarching point of the Troy Tulowitzki trade was they didn't want to keep paying Tulo $20 million a year into the 2020s or into the late 2020 teens. And so they're basically trading 4 years of paying Tulo all that money for paying 2 years of Jose Reyes that kind of money. And then it would be off the books by the time the Rockies would be about ready to contend again, 2017, 2018, whatever that may be. So if they can get out from underneath that massive albatross of a contract without paying too much and hampering the team in some certain way sooner than later, that's got to be the win of the entire season for Jeff Bridich, especially considering the way that Trevor Story has come out this season. I mean, I'm not sure they saw that coming necessarily, but clearly what Story has done, he's definitely made Jose Reyes expendable in every single sense of the term. So this is going to be fascinating to see how this actually comes down. If he can get a swing a trade for Jose Reyes, oh my God, Bridich should win Executive of the Year.
Yeah, especially if it's a trade where somebody takes that contract. I don't think there's any way the Rockies offload that contract entirely, but if somebody takes the majority, the bulk of that contract, and you can get anything in return for Jose Reyes, then I think that's pretty damn impressive. But who in the hell are these teams? Like, who?
I don't know.
The thing is, like, Jose Reyes, okay, like, we've seen, obviously, in sports that people will take on just horrific character people if they think that it'll help them win games in a given sport, Dallas Cowboys.
That's any sport. That's any sport, literally. It's right, literally
like
any
the
sport
worst,
to
the worst human being in sports right now is Greg Hardy. Like,
sure,
the worst human being. And the Cowboys are like, nah, we'll take him. We'll make a winner out of him. Which is hilarious because the Cowboys, no, you're not going to make a winner out of anybody. But, you know, that's not uncommon in any sport. But at the same time, like, Jose Reyes isn't good. He's not good.
His numbers have been declining for about 4 years now.
So weird. Ken Rosenthal, his story is up at foxsports.com now. Reyes obviously has already missed the first 34 games of the season while on administrative leave. A suspension of, say, 60 games, this is the money quote, would cover an additional 26 games and become unpaid. And this isn't prorated. It's not like Jose Reyes is going to get this money back later. Reyes would need to repay any money he received during his paid leave, so he stands to lose half, nearly half, his $22 million salary in 2016. So that's really what it comes down to. The Rockies, man, they seem to maybe be on the verge of breaking out of something just as of right now. Like, if you can come out somehow smelling like roses.
Well, like, that's my point here, that we've, over the last, like, 10 minutes we've been talking, people always criticize Bridich, criticize the Rockies, criticize the front office, and obviously they have made a lot of stupid, stupid mistakes over the last decade plus. And clearly they should not go without our harsh criticisms when they're needed, but you have also, if you're going to criticize them when they do something stupid, you have to praise them when they do something well.
No,
and
you
right
don't.
Now,
no, you don't.
Oh,
you
yeah.
You only have
sorry,
to praise the Broncos for everything. That's it.
Oh, yeah.
It's the only praising that needs to be done.
But my point being that when a team does some intelligent moves and people are recognizing that and the moves come back perfectly for them, or at least better than the other side, how do you not say that they won the trade? How do you not give them credit for, okay,
won
well,
the
maybe,
trade.
Yeah, won the trade. Maybe you give them credit for the things that they end up doing well. But I feel like it's such a heat of the moment thing, oh, they're dumb, and then you think that for the rest of your life without taking it case by case. And that's how everybody seems to work on Twitter, in the Denver sports media landscape. It's like, oh, if they did something wrong once, then that's how I'm going to think of them forever, no matter what they end up doing correctly. So I think right now we should be giving a lot of credit to Jeff Bridich and the front office for the trades they made in the offseason that we all criticized initially, or the Tulo trade going back to last year. Obviously, we don't have what's going – we don't know what's going to happen in the future. We can't see how they'll end up in 5 years. Maybe Castro will flame out. Maybe Hoffman won't be good. Who knows? Who cares? Right now, it looks like the Rockies made the correct decisions by putting together the moves they have done since Jeff Bridich took over.
Yep.
I think overwhelmingly, it's been more positive than negative of the big transactions that they have made in that time.
I mean, what's the thing? Kyle Kendrick? Kyle Kendrick's probably the only really awful move.
And that was a signing because they knew they weren't going to be good, and they needed literally
a
body.
Yeah, they needed somebody, a warm body in there. Yeah. Yeah.
Listen, all of Bridich moves haven't been great. You see a lot of pitchers that they have not been able to harness that weren't necessarily Bridich guys when he was in there, but during the Bridich tenure, the Drew Pomeranzes, the Juan Nicasios, guys who've gone other places and have had a lot of success.
Yeah.
And that's
Jeff
not necessarily
Manship.
All on Jeff Bridich because
Colin McHugh.
Yeah, Jeff Manship has been astounding with the
McHugh
Indians.
Was like a Cy Young contender for a stretch a couple of years ago.
Yeah. So, yes, not everything is rosy, but I think the major transactions that Jeff Bridich has made during his tenure, I think they've worked out for the Rockies pretty much. And if he can get out of Jose Reyes' contract, oh my God. That's it. Game over. Drop the mic
parade.
And leave. Yeah.
He's already, at that stage, he's already the second best general manager in town. I mean, like he's already locked that up. So be on the lookout for that today, or the way that this suspension story has gone, be on the lookout for that sometime in November. That brings us to, I think, our final topic today before we get to one Ben Paulson. Actually, you know what? Let's go to Ben Paulson right now. We're talking to the major league level. We'll hear from Ben Paulson. We'll come back. We'll wrap it up with a couple of topics on the minor league side. Let's hear from Ben Paulson right now. Rockies first baseman / outfielder Benjamin Paulson, he of a sweet beard and dreamy eyes and really good hair, joined the Purple Dinosaur podcast this week from Coors Field.
Well, you know, I mean, just kind of tell me how the season has felt so far. I mean, I know you're being asked to do a lot of different things and handling it all well, it seems like. But what has that been like from your perspective, kind of being a guy who gets thrown into a lineup anywhere at any time and you know, you can play the outfield and handle first and all that kind of stuff? How has this start felt?
You know, that is that's my role, and that's what I'm going to do to help the team win. It's all about winning. So, you know, whenever I see my name in the lineup, it's a great thing. But when I'm not, you know, the next best thing is being that pitch hitter for the big situation to help the team win. And, we've been playing really well so far. Our starting pitching, I think, is surprising a lot of people, and our bullpen is really, really good. And when we hit, it's and those three come together, I think we're going to be a pretty powerful team.
This last road trip, I think the starters put up, you know, almost a sub-3 ERA, and it seemed like every night somebody was doing something else more exciting than the last guy. I mean, John Gray goes out and dominates, and his couple of times through, Eddie Butler looks really good. But even the guys who are contributing, you know, Chris Russell has thrown really well in the times that he's been asked to go out there. For you guys, obviously, you're going to have a lot of faith in those guys, but has it surprised you guys just how effective they've been so far?
No. they've been really, really good. And it started, you know, like you said, Russin and Bergman, you know. We went into Cincinnati, and De La had a little bit of a rough outing, but then Russin held him there and kept him to four runs, and we had a chance to come back in that game, and that's all you can ask for from your bullpen and the guys. So it's not surprising to see him do well. And, you know, it's also really exciting to see Tyler Chatwood come back from his Tommy John and do what he did, because he really set the tone that last road trip with going into Arizona after coming off a couple home tough losses to Pittsburgh, and he shut him down.
When you look at the way this lineup stacks up right now, I mean, for so long it was Tulo and Cargo, and now there are so many different exciting elements to this lineup beyond just that. And I mean, in your position, you get to learn from a guy like Mark Reynolds, who's done this, you know, kind of all around the infield in his career. Now he's playing really good defensive first base. He's coming up in big spots, you know, when he's in the lineup and needs to be there. But for you guys, 1 through 8 or 1 through 9, you know, if a pitcher's batting 8th on a given day, as is wont to happen, it seems like anybody can beat you, and it feels a little bit deeper in that regard, and maybe it's felt from season to season. Does this kind of feel like that to you?
Yeah, our lineup is dangerous, especially you know, DJ LeMahieu. He can hit 1, 2, 3, 4. He literally can hit any spot in the lineup, and he's comfortable doing that. So that's a real testament to him and the lineup. You know, with Chuck laying off and Parra, it seems like he's in a different spot every day, and he does well. But you know, it's also important to have Cargo and Nolan. Those guys, there's some big time hitting there, and you know, whenever everybody else falls, it just follows suit, and it's just kind of hand the baton to the next guy. And about Mark Reynolds, man, he's been something special. He's hit his defense. Like, I think everybody's knows how well he plays defense and how he picks the ball, and he's just fun to watch and fun to be around.
And when you play on the opposite side of an infield from Nolan, and even playing on the opposite side of an infield from Trevor now, do you have to, I mean, comparatively to a time when you were playing with a third baseman who maybe wasn't going to be able to get to a certain amount of balls or whatever at a stage throughout your career, do you as a first baseman have to adjust the fact that now anything hit to that side, you know you've got to be at the bag to be there for a play?
Yeah, and that's not so much the tough part, because I played with Nolan for a while, is the defensive shifts now, where I'm way over in the four hole and making sure I can get back to first base when, you know, when Nolan does make an amazing play, I just have to make sure I bust it over there because I have to cover more ground that way.
When you, that's such a new, not a new age thing, I guess, now in baseball, but it's become so much more pronounced over the last couple of seasons. And now, I mean, you know, last night there's a double play where Nolan's turning it on the bag at second. For you guys, how do you practice stuff like that? I mean, do you work on that in infield where you're all lined up where you're going to be in shifts and given situations?
Yeah. And I think that is really up. Like last year, we moved the shifts, but I don't think we practiced as much. And right from day one in spring training, I think everybody moves into the different positions they're going to be, and we practice training double plays. Like DJ will practice double plays from the outfield. DJ will practice double plays from right behind second base. I will practice flipping the ball from basically second base to the pitcher, you know. So, you know, I think that's where we're having more awareness as a team to play the shift accordingly.
Ben, the ability to come off the bench and provide some pop, be able to swing as a pinch hitter and be effective in big moments is not an easy skill at all, but it seems like it's something that you handle pretty well. It seems like, from an outsider's perspective, the toughest thing about that would be getting into that mentality of, all right, now it's all business, now I got to go, it's the 7th, it's the 8th, I got guys on, whatever it is. What is the toughest thing from the insider's perspective when you've been sitting around for 6-7 innings and all of a sudden it's a big spot and you got to be the guy?
You know, I think it's not making it the big spot. Like I said, once I find what the lineup is going to be that day, that's what my mentality is for the whole day. And so then right when the game starts, you know, the first 3 innings, I kind of just, like, see how things are going. If their pitcher's doing well, then I might face him. Or if it looks like he's throwing a lot of pitches, I might go look at video at the relievers or how the aspect of the game is going to really know. And then just go in the cage. I usually like going in the cage around the bottom of the 5th inning or top of the 5th and getting some swings and warming up, and then just staying warm from then on, just so I can be prepared and know that I'm going to have that same opportunity the next night. And that's what is so cool about being that pinch hitter and being in that role.
How do you feel like you've been able to handle, I mean, obviously you've handled the outfield a lot in your career, but getting so much work at first base, then being put back in the outfield, what is that transition like, and how do you maintain the ability to cover so much ground in a big expanse like it is here?
You know, the one thing I learned right from playing outfield is I'm not going to be a Charlie Blackman or a Cargo out there. I'm going to be the best Ben Paulson as I can be. So, you know, the days I'm not playing, I get my ground balls at first, and then I go take fly balls and throw to the bases in the outfield. And no one's expecting me to be a Gold Glover, but if I can make the routine play and throw to the right base, that's all that's important.
When you were growing up, who were the guys that you really looked up to as ball players? I mean, it's obviously you got a lot of guys around this dugout that you could look at, and, you know, it's whether it's watching Mark Reynolds defensively, what he's been able to do, or, you know, Nolan on the other side, or Cargo to model like yourself after as an outfielder. Who did you like watching them when you were a kid?
Chipper Jones, you know, Adam LaRoche. I was raised in Atlanta, so a lot of the Braves guys are, you know, so special. And, you know, Walt Weiss he might be remembered more for a Brave for that NLCS than as a Rocky, to tell you the truth. So, you know, just all the Braves back then.
A couple more for you, I'll get you out of here. Clemson guy, people out here don't get just how awesome college baseball is, I think, especially in South Carolina. South Carolina is like the state of college baseball for the last decade or so, between you guys and South Carolina and Coastal. And, you know, I mean, even in North Carolina, ECU's program has been ridiculous, and North Carolina is really good. What is it like? I mean, if you had to describe the emotion, the ability to play big-time college baseball and how that contributed to what you are as a professional, how do you encapsulate that?
You know, I thought that was going to be it. I thought college baseball, to tell you, at a young age was that. I was like, man, I'll be lucky if I get to play college baseball. Because, like you said, all those schools, we had a TV station, CSS, and they covered Clemson, Georgia, South Carolina, all those games. And I got to watch Khalil Green, Michael Johnson, Jeff Baker. And I saw those white cleats, and I was like, man, I want to wear those white cleats when I was little. When I was like, as 8 years old, I was like, I want to wear those white cleats, and that's all I remember. And then I had the opportunity to go there. But yeah, college baseball in the SEC and ACC is super competitive. Every weekend is a blast. And I had the luxury of, at Clemson, it's not comparable to the big leagues, but it's pretty darn close with just all the stuff we get. We had so much gear, new cleats whenever we wanted, multiple jerseys, so it wasn't like the minor leagues. We had one pair of white pants, and they're stitching them up, and we're on a bus with no AC. All of our buses had like internet and cable, so I went from Clemson to the minors, and that was a little bit of adjustment for me.
I was a radio guy in the minors for 4 years. I remember the first team that I ever heard of that had Wi-Fi on the bus. I was like blown away by it. What was that adjustment like? Because that's like, you go from, especially, you know, big-time SEC, ACC baseball, you go from the penthouse, and the minors is really the dogout.
Yeah, I didn't know what was going on, really, because, you know, we had a huge locker room at Clemson, and then we come to a little shack with peanut butter and jelly, and, you know, that was adjustment. But, you know, someone told me the best way, our hitting coach Modesto, he's like, you have a lottery ticket, and if you want to cash it in, it's yours to cash in, kind of deal. So, like, don't take anything for granted. But it was just the little adjustment, because I thought, like, man, I'm going to play professional baseball, it's going to be better than Clemson. And I was in a rueful awakening.
Not so much. Yeah. Not so much. You mean the clubhouse at Hagerstown Municipal Stadium was not the dream for you?
Yeah, no.
Last thing. The beard is magnificent, but what is the facial hair status for the rest of the year? Because the people clamor for the mustache, Ben Paulson mustache, but the beard is so good. What's the deal?
I don't know. You know, Cargo told me the other day that I'm a very, very, very unattractive person when I have a mustache, so I should never have a mustache. But, you know, it might have to come out one of these days. You never know with me.
Those are encouraging words.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, it kind of hurt my feelings a little bit, but it's all for fun, so.
Benjamin Paulson, you can find on Twitter. He is at Benjamin Paulson on Twitter. He's such a cool dude, Ben Paulson. I didn't really know what to expect. I figured he'd be a nice guy, but he's got like this friendly, soft-spoken voice, and he's just, I love, he talks about how he thought college baseball was like the end-all be-all in his life. Like, he just wanted to play at Clemson, and that was it. Now he's in the big leagues. Could you imagine being that talented? Oh, I thought maybe, you know, I'd go play in college ball, and that'd be that. Oh, and now I'm in the major leagues, and this will be my life.
Oh, this is great.
Huh. So anyway, I dig me some Benjamin Paulson. Nice dude. So big thanks to Ben for joining the show. And that's going to just about do us. We have a couple of quick topics that we want to hit. Two Rockies prospects. I guess you can't really call one of them a prospect anymore. But yeah. Tyler Matzek and Tyler Anderson, two guys with phenomenal first names, both returned to action this week for the Class A Advanced Modesto Nuts. All right, you're not going to do it this week?
Oh, the Modesto Nuts. I'm still getting over your Tyler joke.
That was a good one. It was a really good one. May 8th, Tyler Anderson in his first start since 2014, 3 2/3, 2 hits, 2 runs, 5 walks, 6 strikeouts. He tweeted at us. We said we were excited to see him back on the mound. He tweeted at us and said, not much to be excited about. But it's a dude who hasn't pitched competitively in a year and a half.
Yeah.
So I, you know, and it's coming off an elbow injury, and command and control are the things that are always difficult to come back from elbow injuries. So I'm not worried about Tyler Anderson. He has since been assigned to the AA Hartford Yard Goats.
Because they needed more pitching talent.
Exactly. Because the Yard Goats somehow needed to get better, because that makes sense. The Yard Goats this season have basically, I think their record is all of the games and none of the games.
Yes. And their ERA is negatives. It's Yeah, they're 23-10 with a 2.35 team ERA, which ballooned from last week when it was 1.83.
Yeah, yeah, it's terrible. It's terrible. Yeah. That team is falling apart. But that's where Tyler Anderson is headed. Excited to see what Tyler Anderson can do. Again, another guy who everybody's given up on. He's only 26 years old. And Anderson, the former first-round pick out of the University of Oregon last year, was trying to rest and rehab what had become a stress fracture in his elbow. Not had become. It was there.
It
was okay. It was healed. He pitched phenomenally, won the minor league ERA title, if I remember right, in 2014. And then last season did not throw a pitch competitively. So really good to see him back. Tyler Matzek, though. The anxiety problems, really felt like he was ready to go for spring training, did not have any success in spring training, so he was once again removed from competition, and had returned to the team. We saw him in the dugout, I think in one of the Arizona series, and a couple of nights ago now, this was back on Wednesday night, joined the Modesto Nuts for an appearance that was only supposed to be one batter, but was only 4 pitches, a walk, a wild pitch, and basically all the stuff that we have feared seeing from Tyler Matzek seems like it reared its head again. So, Tyler Matzek, there are few guys more likable on the planet than Tyler Matzek, and you kind of just hope maybe at this stage a change of scenery or something can help resurrect that guy's career, because he's so talented when he's good, but, man, it just sucks. The Rockies now, to this point, did hire a new member of the mental health staff, I guess.
Minor league mental health staff. Rick Perea is the major league guy, also is the Broncos, and they just signed a new guy this week.
Right, whose name I can't find either. I think we were both searching for. So that, you know, maybe there's something else that the Rockies can try, but at this stage, you just hope Tyler Matzek can somehow get it figured out, no matter what.
Yeah, man, it's just the worst watching that happen. Like, because he's a guy you can absolutely pull for. You've seen the success he's had at the major league level.
Yep.
And to see this happen just 2 years removed from all that success that he had at the end of 2014, the complete games, and, you know, becoming the potentially the ace of the staff.
Yep.
Like, it's just,
And to have it play out in such a public forum, so too. I've had this conversation with Nate Kreckman a few times. Like, if you could imagine the worst possible things to go through as an athlete, this has got to be up there on that list. Because it's not an injury.
Oh, yeah.
It's not just ineffectiveness. It's something where it's a mental thing that you are feeding internally, and other factors externally are probably feeding as well. And the worse it gets, the more heightened those things are. And it just spirals out of control on a very public stage. Like, I can't imagine going through anything quite as bad as that. Ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh. So we're really pulling for Tyler Matzek to get it figured out. Jorge De La Rosa was sent to Albuquerque, made a rehab start for the Isotopes. I saw him in the clubhouse the other day, so it looks like De La Rosa is pretty close to being back. Daniel Descalso also has been in a rehab assignment with Albuquerque as well. I would imagine when he gets back, the Rockies will be saying goodbye to Cristian Adames, who is out of minor league options and has not been good through his 25 games played this season. He's OPSing 374. OPS.
That's like Tulo numbers.
Yeah, basically. So I would imagine we'll see the end of the Cristian Adames era.
What an era it was.
Yeah. But Jorge De La Rosa, when he gets back, I mean, Chris Russen's got to be the odd man out, right?
Yeah, to imagine. They're going to give – John Gray's not going anywhere. Chad was not going anywhere. Bettis isn't going anywhere. I'm sure they want to see what Eddie Butler can do. And Chris Russen has proved that he can be effective pitcher two times through a lineup. And the exact opposite the third time through the lineup.
Yeah, Chris Russen
when given the opportunity.
Really not a he's not a bad little member of the staff. It's just, you know, what role does he take? Because
he's a good long man.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what it ends up being.
He can't be a guy who is somebody that you're relying on every 5 days. The Rockies, by the way, in terms of other guys they could potentially cut ties with, Christian Bergman so far this season has not been great. He still has 3 minor league options. Carlos Estevez has not been great. He started off pretty strong, but his numbers, after that first outing have really kind of ballooned. He allowed runs in 3 straight appearances in April, but also a guy who has minor league options. The Rockies also have Scott Oberg with 2 minor league options. One of those is already in use. Estevez also has an option in use right now. So those are 3 guys. But again, Scott Oberg, for as much as everybody hates Scott Oberg, he's got an ERA of 2.89 through his 9 1/3 innings this year. Now, he's walked 4 and he struck out 4, and opponents are batting .286 against him, but hasn't wet the bed just yet.
There are worse guys we could put in there.
Yeah. So,
like 2015 Boone Logan.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, when Jorge De La Rosa comes back, Eddie Butler keeps that rotation spot, which is exciting. And I'm excited to see what he does on Sunday, too, because I like good Eddie Butler. I like Eddie Butler, period, but I really like watching good Eddie Butler. He's a lot of fun. So,
yeah.
I guess
he's better than bad Eddie Butler or Niblin Eddie. Niblin Eddie, his old blues. Yeah. His old bluesman side character.
Niblin Eddie. Playing this week at El Chapulte Peck. Man. all right, so is that it? I think that's it. All right, we're gonna shut it down. We're gonna wrap it up for the 74th edition of Purple Dinosaur Podcast. Hey, you can get in touch with the show. Email us purpledinosaurpodcast@gmail.com. Tweet at us. He's at Master Tones. I am at Tyler Mon, and the show is at Purple Dinocast. You can buy our shirts, purpledinosaurpodcast.bigcartel.com. We got good stuff there. And I think that'll
I'll be seeing
up.
Tyler and Kirsten this week. They're coming out to LA. I'm excited.
Cool. I might have to do that at some point this summer. Not to see you, but just because I want to go to Dodgers.
You just want to go to Los Angeles.
I want to go to a Dodgers game while Vin Scully is still the voice of the Dodgers. Even ironically, though, that will make
though you
me
could
not
watch it anywhere in LA
and
you
or hear him. But I still want to go there while I'm in the same ballpark as Vin Scully. I just want to be able to feel that one final time.
Fair enough.
Gonna make me so depressed. That's it. Get in touch with us there and give us a rating and a review and a subscription on iTunes and Stitcher and everywhere else, and find us at Purple Row. Our big thanks to the guys there for hosting the show.
It's a bad review, don't give us bad reviews.
Unless it's bad, we don't want any of those. Give us all good stuff. All right, that's it. Talk to you next week. Right. Love you. Bye.